The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. I want to let you know, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. Any feedback is always welcome here. I'm going to begin. Who would have thought that in the second week of December, we would start a Monday off where I would say, thank you, mullets. Thank you, Mormons. And thank you for giving us one of the best games of the season. Because I, honestly, guys, it's a credit to both athletic programs to make sure that game was put together late in the week on the short notice. And who would have thought that BYU, Coastal Carolina, a game like that would come down to the defense and a stop at the one-yard line. So in a weekend where there were very few surprises, BYU and Coastal Carolina should be celebrated. You guys started things off, and Herbie, being there game day, obviously no crowd, no big crowd that we're used to, but you know, Jamie Chadwell's program deserves to be, you know, deserves to be talked about at the start of this podcast after that performance.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun with College game day going down to Myrtle Beach. And we actually had fans, there for the first time, not just, sometimes we've had some marching band members, but we had our first, sighting of fans at a show, socially distanced, and everybody was safe, but had a lot of energy. And you know, that they got a cool little facility down there, and they're doing amazing things. I thought we'd see a lot of points. In fact, David and I both kind of broke down the offenses. He took Coastal Carolina and that unique offensive style and how they have a chance to be balanced and try to get you out in space. And I took BYU and the physicality and the quarterback play of Zach Wilson and thought, Billy, we have a chance really to see which quarterback has the ball last. And instead it was a physical battle. And Coastal Carolina said, enough of this talk about BYU and how physical they are. David, they wanted to let America know that they can battle, even though they're undersized. They were swinging. They were swinging literally, by the way, at the end of the first half. They were swinging at BYU and trying to hold up there at the end, and they made a play at the goal line to preserve that victory.
Yeah, and how about all year, you know, since the rankings came out, we've been talking about BYU, and they're underrated, and the committee's kind of been stiff-arming us and saying, hey, y'all sit at the little kids' table. I don't really care what y'all say. It doesn't really matter. And they were right. By the way, like, listen, I love – what BYU's accomplished, but one thing, Kirk, and I want to hear your opinion on this and tell me if I'm wrong. And I don't care if you say I'm wrong, it's not going to hurt my feelings. All three of my feelings have already been hurt in my life. So here's what I saw. Advantage, not even close, like night and day athletic ability for Coastal Carolina over BYU, like across the defensive front, across the running back front, across the skill position front, like, I think BYU absolutely got, you know, suffocated with how fast Coastal Carolina was. And if we're going to talk about BYU playing against Alabama and being in the college football playoff and accomplishing bigger and better things and being, you know, highly ranked up there, I think Coastal Carolina shut that down really quickly. You agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can only go by the results. I mean, if you're a BYU fan, you could say, well, you know, we only had a couple days to get ready and we had to fly across the country, but you know, that you can't say that. If you take the game, you take the game, and here we go. You know what I mean? And they understand that. Kalani Sitake, their head coach, I didn't hear him after the game, but he's a former player. He's like us. I mean, he's going to say, I don't know if you guys heard him, but I'm guessing he had no excuses. It's just like, hey, tip your cap to them. Like you said, they were athletic. I love the chip on their shoulder that they played with. You know, I think their coach probably did a good job of saying nobody thinks we can play with these guys. And their team came out with an attitude and out in space. I mean, it wasn't so much BYU's defense that couldn't hold up, because I thought they did a good job. I mean, Grayson McCall, what did he throw for, less than 100 yards in the
85,
game?
I think.
Yeah, I mean, so they did their job of preventing a potentially – explosive offense as far as the perimeter. But the when you watch the game for four quarters and the fight was, if you're looking at a fight, the aggressor was Coastal Carolina. They took the fight to BYU at the end of the day. And I think that's why they were able to hold on there to a victory and give them all the credit. They deserve all the attention and all the credit for winning, for scheduling the game and then winning the game.
Yeah, the one thing that stood out too is that they basically said, all right, we're going to control the time of possession. I think it was nearly 38 minutes, and they had three long drives that felt like they were like, I think it was like double digit drives of like 11, 13, and 17. And when you could do that, that's just a huge advantage because you're not giving Zach Wilson opportunities, right? And Satake afterwards just said, we're looking forward to bouncing back, getting a better performance next week. The way that we react to this is going to really determine a lot of big things for them in the future. They're going to have to lean on each other. We have to really regroup as a team and believe in each other more. No finger pointing or anything like that. That's a classic coach and why everybody loves him, right?
One last thing on this, whether it's Coastal Carolina or BYU, I think what happens is fans around the country that are not fans of BYU or Coastal Carolina, you gravitate towards these coaches and these programs because I didn't hear anything from BYU pre-Coastal Carolina matchup about, man, this isn't fair. We deserve more respect. We deserve to be in the top five. You heard none of that. You just heard, hey, we got a lot of work to do. We got to get better. You know, the committee does whatever they do. We just got to keep playing games. That's all he did. He took the high road. Same thing with Coastal Carolina. You know, they're just happy to get some attention and happy to get a chance to play an opponent like BYU. So what happens is if you're a small guy, Luke Fickell's doing the same thing, by the way. How many times do you hear Luke Fickell saying, man, this is wrong. System's not fair. This is BS. Like, you never hear that. And so what happens is, you know, it's kind of like it's a smart game from a PR standpoint because people are propping Cincinnati up for them. They're propping BYU up for them. They're propping Coastal Carolina up for them because these teams have taken the smart path of not beating on their chest, saying that you need to respect us right now. You better respect us. I think it's a smart move.
Excellent point. And by doing this, guys, honestly, like in a year like this where you have very little time, to me, I think people will look back at this season and have so much more respect for BYU and Coastal by saying, hey, they figured it out. Under the circumstances, they didn't duck anybody. They found a way. And I think that has a lasting effect down the road of looking back at a season. Hey, remember in 2020, stuff was crazy, but man, you know, props to those two programs and the coaches and the athletic departments for making that happen. I think just a bigger picture, it helps translate down the road. Now, the rules aren't the same, guys. We know that. We're seeing this play out in front of us. When I say the rules aren't the same, from conference to conference, because how many games can you play? And that falls into a conversation you guys are going to venture into on Tuesday night with Ohio State, because we won't know, and that could be updated probably in the next day, two, or hopefully by Wednesday on the status of the Ohio State-Michigan game and if that game is going to be played out. When I bring all that up, Barry Alvarez, who has a strong voice, who's part of the rulemaking at the beginning of the season where they said they have to meet a certain amount of games to play and qualify for the Big Ten championship, is talking about, hey, we've got to be open to adjusting and figuring some things out. How do you think this plays out down the road with Ohio State if there's no Michigan game this weekend? Is this do they have to get on board and get another game in your mind, Herbie, to see if they can qualify, or do they wait on the Big Ten making some changes and saying, hey, they should still qualify and play in the Big Ten championship?
I thought what you alluded to from Barry Alvarez is an important thing to factor in, reading between the lines. I wouldn't be surprised in an ever-evolving world and landscape. We saw what the ACC did last week, and whether you agree with it or disagree with it, they did it. You know, they just said, well, that's what we're going to do. Notre Dame's not going to play a game, cancel that weight game. We're not going to make up the Florida State game with Clemson. Those two teams can rest up, get ready. They're both secured, and they're headed to Charlotte 2 weeks of rest. And everybody on the outside said, wait, they're scratching their head. That's not fair. And the ACC said, yeah, well, that's what we're doing. And nobody can say boo. And I think that's 2020 in a nutshell. And that's why if the Big Ten, we'll see what happens this week. You know, hopefully Michigan's able to kind of put a cap on the virus, and we'll find out in another couple of days if they have a team that's able to play. And if they can't, I think the first thing would be what you saw with BYU and Coastal Carolina. You know, are there any other teams that are canceled within the Big Ten? I know Minnesota's had a hard time over the last few weeks. You know, are they going to be able to go to Lincoln and play? Will they have to shut it down? Will they reshuffle the deck and try to get an Ohio State an opponent. I have no idea. I mean, that's
Kirk,
one
would
thought.
Would you reschedule a game like that? Would you play Nebraska twice for the second time?
No, I don't think you play them twice. I think you end up reshuffling, maybe moving some other teams around. And, you know, Ohio State had their Maryland game canceled, so you don't know if they would possibly come into play. I just depends on what happens with some of these other teams, and whether or not there's a team available. So anyway, that'll all be defined in the next few days, and we'll find out. I mean, maybe Michigan's able to play. You know, I know they couldn't play last week. Maybe they will be able to play. But let's just say Ohio State, they either play Michigan, option A. They don't play Michigan. There's other teams in the Big Ten that have to shut down besides Michigan. Maybe a team opens up. Maybe they reshuffle the deck. Maybe Ohio State finds that sixth opponent that way. That would be option two. And then option three is if Michigan is unable to play and no other teams are available, then they're sitting there with five data points. And then you go back to the comment that I thought Barry Alvarez, kind of like he's leaving breadcrumbs for us, when he publicly said, you know, I think he came out and said Ohio State's the best team. It doesn't really make sense not to have them in the Big Ten championship. And so if we need to revisit how many games it needs to be qualified, then we'll do that. And you know what? If they decide that, then it is what it is. There's nothing anybody can do to prevent that. So I don't know what's going to happen. But as far as I see it, David, those are really the only three options. Either Michigan, another opponent surfaces, or they maybe reevaluate whether or not it needs to be six games. I think those are your three options this week.
And I think everybody around the country probably would be pissed off with that. Like, why do you change this? Why do you do that? And maybe Indiana is, because Indiana is sitting in a spot where they would be, you know, the Big Ten champion. And I think some context, like, listen, Ohio State looks like the best team. There's no doubt. Ohio State looked like the best team a couple years ago, and they lost by 30 to Iowa. Like, they looked like the best team a couple years ago, and they lost by 28 or 29 to Purdue. Like, right? Like, this – they could lose, and that could happen. So there is a point where you want to say, I want to see them play X amount of games. I think you find a game no matter what. And if you can't find a game, what the Big Ten is going to do is the Big Ten is going to put Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, because the Big Ten knows they're the best team, like Barry Alvarez says, knows the best chance to get in the college football playoff and represent the Big Ten on the big stage. So I think that's what will happen in the future. And listen, Ohio State looked great, man. I love the way they looked this week. Down all those guys, down all those coaches, came out fist to face, smacked around Michigan State. I'm not saying Michigan State's a great football team by any stretch of the imagination, but I just love the way they came out, handled their business, and looked really, really good doing it.
I think the bigger point that needs to be talked about, and we all wondered, and I, you know, after talking to folks at Ohio State, you know, and they even wondered, Ryan even wondered, you know, specifically if the offensive line was okay and ready, you know, with some of the starters gone and some of the leadership gone. And I think when I saw on College Game Day the warm-up shots at East Lansing, I completely changed my concern. I went from thinking, well, you know, Michigan State fresh off a win against Northwestern, they play good defense. It's up at East Lansing. Ohio State, you know, from time to time, doesn't always play their best against Michigan State. And then all of a sudden, I saw the Ohio State players warming up, looking like they're going into a national championship. And I thought, oh, no, I feel bad for Michigan State now. This is about to get ugly. And that's exactly how it turned out. Ohio State was backed into a corner. The coaches clearly did a good job of motivating them, making them feel there's a big question mark around this program, not only with the COVID issues, but with the way they finished in their last game. Everybody watched against Indiana before they canceled Illinois. They were 35-7, and they took their foot off the gas. Same thing against Rutgers. You know, it's same thing against Penn State. So it become a little bit of a thing for them. And people forget they were up 35-7 against Indiana and dominating. And they just, give Indiana credit for battling back, but Ohio State had him at 35-7. And I think Ryan Day really challenged his team. Well, who knows how many more games we're going to get? People are questioning you guys. You better show them what you got. And man, did they take that challenge? And you could see, like I said, in the warmups, it was fixing to be a tough day
for Mel Tucker and Sparty.
By the way, this also emphasizes to me, it shows me the difference, the talent difference between Ohio State and everybody else in that league. It's ridiculous. I mean, it is, it's stark, man. I mean, Kevin, I think they could play with half their backups and win almost every game in the league, maybe every game in that league. Like, I just, it's not even a fair fight. It's not even close.
But you could almost say that about Alabama and Georgia in the SEC. Well, Florida, you got three teams in the
SEC. A&M. I mean, I'm on board with you. I don't think A&M is a great team, but I mean, the Big Ten right now is not.
No,
there's not anything to point to at all, Kirk, as a reasonable, decent threat to Ohio State. Like,
no, I mean,
Wisconsin is not even close to that good. Like,
no,
Wisconsin's way down. I mean, just it's not.
And Penn State typically gives you that other team that kind of at least can be in the conversation with Ohio State, and they've competed with Ohio State over the last 4 or 5 years. And this year, obviously, things went sideways. By the way, I'm happy for them that they didn't throw it all away. I mean, they're showing some life and at least competing. You know, I don't think people on a national level in Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin and Penn State are the two that I think typically are at a different level, and they have not been where you'd expect them to be. Northwestern, the style of football that they play, they don't get a whole lot of respect. Iowa, another team that people watch them play, they don't get a whole lot of respect, but they don't have nearly the roster that the Buckeyes have, but they, because of the style of football they play, they're competitive. So that's what I love about bowl games. You throw Northwestern into a bowl game, you throw Iowa into a bowl game, and you throw Indiana into a bowl game. And then you find out, you know, it's not so much maybe, you know, a combine at Indianapolis with the roster, but the style of football allows them to play with a lot of people in the country.
Yeah, and the Buckeyes showing their depth. And obviously, Michigan State a different year, but when you have 23 players out, three offensive linemen out, and as well as another starter. To me, they play with purpose. That's the one thing that stood out to me. Like the entire game, they played with a mission, and no down were they taking off. They were happy to be playing football after losing a week here. It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, we're just a couple weeks away from hearing the final verdict on who's getting into the playoff. How's it look for you right now?
Yeah, as you know, we've been doing it all year. Every week, we're going to take a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. The All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff, and not a whole lot has changed. I mean, I'll have you run through the teams and the actually up-to-date All-State Playoff Predictor. But for me, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, all up at the top. I guess if there's any tweak, A&M deserves some credit for going on the road and winning. You know, anytime you go on the road in the SEC, even without the crowd, it's still a tough thing to do for some of these teams. And A&M, I thought, from the way they looked offensively against LSU, by the way, an interception there at the goal line, and maybe it's a different outcome, but still they won the game. So you might see them continue to go in a good direction. I think it's a moot point at the end of the day when we get into the final results from championship weekend, but they helped themselves. Cincinnati, you got Indiana. How about them? What a story. Maybe the story of the year and what they've done. And then Coastal Carolina, you know, they had a chance to go up against big time opponent who we've all talked about being very, very underrated. And so if we all felt that they were underrated, Coastal Carolina ends up beating them. So they deserve a lot of credit for that win as well. So it's going to be fun. We got 2 weeks to go, and we'll see what happens here as far as upsets or anything that might shake this up.
When you take a look at the playoff predictor right now, Alabama at 97.8%. The way they're at in that one slot, you could basically say 100%. Ohio State at 85%. Notre Dame, 64%. Clemson at 52%. A&M at 30%, followed by Cincinnati, Indiana. Then you get Florida. And you mentioned Coastal Carolina, just over 2% at 10-0. just a great story for them to even be in this conversation. It just sums up where we are in the college football season of 2020. And I'm going to start with Pollock here because this is going to be probably a topic on Tuesday night with you guys. And you played this scenario out on a tweet. Man, let's come back again after watching Ohio State and watching A&M. And I want to play a scenario out with you guys because it feels like the way the committee is shifting and talking to us, this is going to come down to six teams when it comes to four slots. If Clemson beats Notre Dame and Florida beats Alabama, what do we do with Ohio State? What do we do with A&M? How do we figure it out? And Pollock, let's start with you. What would be your four?
So you're saying Alabama or Florida beats Alabama. It's a scenario we talked about the other day.
Exactly. But now that you've seen Ohio State again, now you've seen A&M again, who gets in? Who gets the four slots after this past weekend watching more football?
Okay, so Florida wins. I think Florida has to be in. You're telling me your only loss is to A&M on the road by a field goal. Great football game. Florida's 1,000% in. If Clemson beats Notre Dame, Clemson's in. There's no doubt about it. I don't have any doubt about that at all. To me, if Ohio State wins this week, wins the Big Ten championship game, I think they're in. I think you've got Notre Dame and Alabama fighting for two spots.
And wait, fighting for one spot? Because that's the number one, number two team right now. That's correct. The scenario.
Correct.
I think that's the – everybody wants doomsday or Armageddon.
Yes, please. Sign me up, bro.
That's it. Under that scenario, if Clemson beat Notre Dame and avenged that loss and Florida with Trask ended up out dueling Mac Jones and beat Alabama, you essentially have five teams for four spots if Ohio State keeps winning. What people would knock Ohio State is the amount of games they played, but if they end up going to Indianapolis and they are Big Ten champions, It will be very, very challenging for the committee. So David said, if Florida beats Alabama, Florida's a lock to go. That's done. If Clemson wins, they're a lock. And then you have Alabama, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Ohio State. And the only thing I'll say about Notre Dame is this. They, if you're looking at their resume, they beat the number one ranked team in Clemson. That would be very, very hard. Now, if they get blown out against Clemson, and that's under this scenario, maybe it's a different thing. I think Notre Dame would be in because of the win against Clemson as a number one ranked team. If you're looking at, you know, again, when you get down to it, they call it a cluster. They're trying to separate. Head-to-head would be one thing. Conference champion would be another. Then they look at the strength of schedule. They look at common opponent. I think it'd be a debate between Alabama and Ohio State personally. And I think you would have one as a Big Ten champion under this scenario we're talking about. And then you'd have Alabama, who we all agree is the best team in the country, lost in their SEC championship game. And then it would be, has Ohio State played enough games as a Big Ten champion versus Alabama, the committee feels is the best team in the country, even though they lost their last game. I mean,
who would you put in?
I think Ohio State gets the nod under the rules of what they've set as a champion. They would get the nod over Alabama.
I think we're playing the if, coulda, woulda, shoulda, coulda. So we don't know the scores of games. We don't know how anything was played out. So I think it's a tough scenario. But I can tell you this beyond a shadow of a doubt. Alabama, to me, is a much better football team than Ohio State. I don't have to bat an eye. I don't have to look at resumes, which clearly points to Alabama anyways. I'm talking about tape-wise, talent-wise, and completeness of team-wise. Alabama is much better from what I've seen so far. So if that's the debate, again, for me, I'm putting in the better team. To me, I would put an Alabama in that scenario.
And then one scenario, too, that could play out is who's got the best win, and that is Alabama over A&M. And if A&M is still in the top five conversation, then you could say Alabama already beat A&M.
By the way, it's the better win. They might have two better wins. I mean, it's clearly better. By the way, Alabama, I think if you want to look at Alabama's resume, I think they have the best resume, period, from what they've accomplished. Like, Kirk, I want to talk about Notre Dame, and I want to give them props because they deserve props for the Clemson win. I can't act like Trevor Lawrence played that football game. I can't. Like, I have to take that into account, and I think it will be taken into account. Now we see it round two. We see Skowski back. We see Marvin Jones Jr. We see all these guys back now for Clemson, and it makes it a totally different game. I don't know that the Irish will get the mulligan that I think people want to think they are going to automatically get because they perceive that as the best win in the country over Clemson.
Let's make sure we're all on the same page here, because under these scenarios are impossible. Is it a last second field
impossible?
Goal? Is it a blow? And David, you know, you're preaching to the choir about Alabama. You're the guy that said Alabama's done without Jalen Waddle. So I'm with you.
Yes, I am.
I'm all about Alabama being.
You know what? I switch it. Alabama would be out. My God, get him out of there. You're right.
Yeah. So I mean, I get you with Bama, but I just think that the committee's challenge would be based on what they've done in an unprecedented year. I really think they've had a hard time taking Notre Dame out, whether you like that or not. I'm just telling you what I think. If we're just going to go by who are the best four teams, like, period, doesn't matter. Let's put the best four in. But that's a different kind of discussion than what we think they will potentially do off of that doomsday scenario. Under that doomsday scenario, the only thing we know for sure is if Clemson will beat Notre Dame and Florida beat Alabama, those two are a lock. They're in. Yep. The other three for those two spots, that's what the debate would be. And that's where, you know,
it'd be awesome. Please sign us up for that.
Yeah, right.
Now, I'd love to just be in the room. It's bonkers to think. I mean, again, with this scenario, that two spots and three blue bloods, and that, Alabama, and that, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Like, now just let's to go hear the conversation.
Let's go back to reality. There's a really good chance that Clemson could avenge their loss to Notre Dame in Charlotte. There's a really good chance that Ohio State wins out. And there's a really good chance that Alabama is going to beat Florida. So
why you got to bust bubbles, bro? Why you got to bust bubbles, man?
But I'm just saying, like, I mean,
I hate you, Debbie Downer. Not, good Lord. We're having fun here, you know?
Shocked if it's Alabama at one and Clemson at two and Ohio State at three and Notre Dame at four. And Alabama, Notre Dame play in a Sugar Bowl, and Ohio State and Clemson play in a Rose Bowl. That's what I think, by the way, is going to happen. Not the other pie in the sky, doomsday, Armageddon, hypothetical.
Guys, and if we get a rematch in a semifinal like we did last year, because the hitting on that field with Ohio State, Clemson at the Fiesta last year was absolutely incredible. That was a fantastic game.
Two totally different teams roster-wise from last year to this year. But at least you have the two quarterbacks. Would be fun to see them go head-to-head. And Ohio State, I don't think a player on their roster, I know the head coach, doesn't go to bed since that game last, whenever it was, December 29th or whatever it was. I don't think they've gone to bed one night mad or not thinking about the anger that they had towards that game. Especially
they were the better team.
The T. Higgins fumble and the way they feel they got jobbed. So it'd be very fitting for these two teams basically to have a fifth quarter and keep playing based on the way that game ended last year.
I love the scenario. And the idea that it's on January 1st at the Rose in Pasadena. Oh, man. And the sun setting and all that. That would be just great in a year of chaos. But we'll see how this plays out. Another thing that we're going to see how it plays out and potentially could be decided, looks like it will be decided on Saturday, December 19th, is the Heisman race. And just this past week, the Vegas odds, off the win against LSU, Mac Jones is now in front of Kyle Trask. I just want to talk to you guys about a couple of other guys, because those are the two guys that are headlining it right now. You can't sleep on Trevor Lawrence and what he gets the chance to face a very good Notre Dame defense. But at one point, Herbie, while you guys were calling the game, it felt like every single update, it required a Devontae Smith. He's done this now. He's done this now. I can't believe he continues to do this. And we're still in the first half. He was on another level with Mac Jones against LSU. And I understand LSU's defense a little different this year. as they've changed everything. But Devontae Smith's, you know, what he's done in the last, few months, to me, he's elevated his game even more. He should be getting some Heisman love as well.
Well, he'll be on my ballot. I just don't know if he'll be at one or two. I mean, how can you not under the scenario of what he's had to deal with as an offense? Jalen Waddle goes down. How is this offense going to make big plays? We knew about Devontae Smith, but instead of having Waddle and Smith to defend, and that's a defensive coordinator's worst nightmare, and Mechie, now you can think, okay, well, we got to take Devontae Smith out. We got to figure out, let's roll coverage towards him. Let's bracket him. Let's do whatever we got to do. We got to take him out. Dude still is going to get to 100 receptions. He's at 1,300 yards right now. I mean, think about that. In an offense where you know he's going to get the ball, and he still gets the ball. So we can talk Mac Jones all we want. I'd like to give Sark a Heisman personally for what he's done is with the play. The way he's come up with ways, you know, he's moving Devontae Smith now. You know, he's not in one spot. He's doing a good job pre-snap, moving him over here, confusing defenses, creating matchups intentionally, and then getting him the ball. But that's phenomenal that when you know a guy is going to get the ball and still is able to go out and do it. So, yeah, to me, it's easy to talk quarterback, easy to talk Trask. He's had a monster year. Mac Jones, it's easy to come into the year with expectations. Trevor, Justin Fields. But if you watch football and you evaluate what happens every Saturday, it's impossible not to look at the full scenario of Devontae Smith and what I just talked about with Jalen Waddle and defense is geared to stop him and not put him at least on your Heisman. For me, he's winning it for me right now. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks. But I can't imagine him not being on most guys' Heisman ballot.
He can't win it. He's a wide receiver. That's not the way the game works anymore. This is a quarterback award. It's changed. It's not the best player anymore in college football. It's not. It's the way it is. It was the way it is. It sucks. It's terrible.
That's the way it is. That's the rule.
I mean, that's the way it's been working for a long time now. You know,
where would you put Smith? Where he is on mine.
By the way, I think right now it is wide open. And I don't think I've ever said that to this point in the season. Ever. Like, I am literally looking at the next couple games to decide the Heisman Trophy.
Saturday, December 19th. We're gonna see it decided.
Trask has been great. He's been awesome. Like he's been outstanding. But Mac Jones to me has been stupid, otherworldly. I mean, it's just been insane. Like his accuracy and his movement and his decision making and he's left no doubt against everybody he's faced, and he hasn't looked mortal once. So I would give the edge to Mac Jones, but they play Florida. I think to me, Justin Fields is out of it now. I don't think he's in it. I think Trevor Lawrence and Ian Book are both in it. Ian Book has impressed me as much as anybody the last 3 or 4 weeks the way he's played. What if he goes and does it against Clemson again? You know, I think he's very much in the mix. Devontae Smith is in the mix. I don't think he's going to be – I don't even think he'll go to New York. He's not going to go to New York anyways, but I don't think he'll be in the top five with the way people vote nowadays, which is criminal.
I'm glad you brought up Ian Book because if considering what he has done the last month, if he beats Clemson a second time, he is worthy of a conversation, at least in the top three. And it feels like he has not been in the top three in this discussion. And
dude, he doesn't have near the weapons these guys have. Like he doesn't have Florida weapons. He doesn't have Alabama weapons. He doesn't have Ohio State weapons. He's got a bunch of tight ends. And by the way, his receivers are tight ends, for God's sakes. I mean, 11's a tight end, okay? Skarnecki, right? He's a tight end, okay? You call him whatever you want to call him, but he's a big plus size. McKinley's a big plus size wide receiver, like, but he's making magic happen. I mean, he's done an unbelievable job of making play after play after play and highlight plays that are fun too and exciting. If he does it again, it'll be cool.
I want to close out the podcast here. This is a Tom Allen podcast, and we have talked about Indiana on several occasions this year. But just your quick thoughts, you guys were former players. you understand the relationship and how important it is with the coach. That post game, you don't often see that publicly, where he's on the field and everybody, every single player is coming up to him and saying they love him. And I just have never seen it. Maybe you see it inside the locker room. Maybe you see it after a season. But what was your reaction to Tom Allen getting all the love after that big win against Wisconsin?
Well, I think if you've been around that program at all, you know, I know now they're on center stage, so it's bright lights and people are seeing that program. But I just would like to say, just knowing him and knowing the way his players feel about him, this is not a like an aberration. This is not a 2020 thing. This is Indiana. This is how they roll. They just happen to be, the stars are aligned and they're overcoming every single obstacle put in their way. And they deserve credit for that. But I think that passion, you could tell when a team, how they feel about a coach based on when he's talking to them, where their eyes are and their reaction to what he says. And some people might look at him and say, oh, is the camera rolling? Okay, ready? Here comes my speech. Oh, wait, camera's not ready? No. It's not like that. This guy's real, or he wouldn't get the reaction that he gets from his players. And so if you ever want to know what a team thinks about their coach, watch them and how they react to him when he is in their presence and when he speaks. I think it's refreshing. I think, you know, if they were 7-4 or 5, I think you would still see this team love him. It wouldn't be with the same jubilation and excitement because they're having a magical year, but there's always that respect there. And I tell you, David, you don't see it. Matt Campbell has it. I talked about him on game day. If I were a coach in this me world we live in, I would study Tom Allen. I would study Matt Campbell, these guys that are figuring out ways to get guys to buy in and create that culture, because it's genuine. That's all I can say.
Well, and that's the words you just used. You can study it all you want, Kurt. You either got it or you don't. And when you're genuine and players know you love them and you're the same guy every day and you show up every day and you show them that you love them and you tell them that you love them and you show them again and show them again, like, that's when that happens. And not everybody can do that. I think he's got an exceptional coaching staff around him too. I think Kane Walmack's a superstar on the defensive side of the football. He's 33 years old. He's their DC. He's a younger, obviously, DC, but he's a stud. He's got energy. He's got a great scheme. They've got great scheme on both sides of the football to go with Tom Allen and his ability to motivate and love people. Like, that's when it's special. That's when it's unique. So, props to Indiana. What a season. By the way, Kirk, props to Indiana, my super dog this week. Booyah! Let's go. Cheering them on. L.E.O., baby. L.E.O.!
That's awesome.
Good stuff there from Herbie and Pollock, as usual, here on a Monday. And honestly, like, I can't wait till tomorrow night. And that is the ranking show to hear what is the thinking behind Ohio State moving forward. And obviously in the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll have some more clarity, hopefully, about what's going on with Michigan. We hope that they are healthy. And as they deal with the with COVID within the program, and we'll hopefully get that game, because it's a great rivalry game. It's what the Big Ten is all about. So our fingers are crossed. Big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, of course, on the other side, making sure we can bring this podcast to you every Monday and Wednesday during the college football season. And if you want more college football with our fingers crossed here in this final stretch, social distance, wear a mask, stay safe.